Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rum and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Michael Bauer, Jeannie Ives, John McCarron, and Mike Miller. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And if you want to join me on the World Wide Web, it's beyondthebeltway.com, beyondthebeltway.com. That's where you can be in touch with the audio and video portion of the program. Well, there are 22 days to go before Iowa. There are 302 days before election. And NBC, Wall Street Journal, Marist came out with a poll today, released this morning. And this is how things are looking in Iowa for the Democrats. And we're going to look at the Democrats and talk about them first tonight. First of all, in the Democratic race in Iowa, let's take a look at those polls. If we can throw them up on the screen, please. They are. Hillary Clinton in Iowa is leading with 48% of the vote. But Bernie Sanders is on her heels at 45%, O'Malley way back at 5%. And then in New Hampshire, if you go to New Hampshire, it's Bernie Sanders on top with 50%, Hillary Clinton within the margin of error at 46%, and O'Malley a distant 5%. So let me begin by talking with our Democrats tonight. Michael Bauer, let me ask you this question. I asked this last week, and I'm going to ask you again this week to our Democrats. Do you think there's a possibility that Bernie Sanders could upend Hillary Clinton?
When you say upend, let me split that into
two. Defeat her, win the nomination.
Well, I think there's certainly a reasonable possibility that Hillary Clinton could lose both in Iowa and New Hampshire. I would say right now, looking at the NBC Wall Street Journal poll, they're both toss-ups. And I would expect that if she does happen to lose both primaries, suddenly the party is up for grabs, and I would not be surprised to see elders in the Democratic Party go back to Joe Biden and say, we want you to reconsider.
John McCarron, you are a journalism professor at DePaul University. You've also written for the Chicago Tribune for over 30 years, but you've identified yourself a Democrat on this program. What's your answer to the same question?
I prefer to be called a liberal, and I'm not really a professor. Mike Miller is really a professor.
You're an adjunct professor.
I think adjunct lecturer is the proper. And I wanted to say, a year ago I was on this show, and you said to me, we were doing one of these go-rounds, and you said, who possibly could run against Hillary Clinton? And I suggested to you a guy named Bernie Sanders, an independent from New Hampshire, and you looked at me like I was out of my mind. So
remind me of that. That's okay.
Yeah, okay. So
I was not alone.
What's going to happen? I'm not sure it makes much difference who wins in Iowa, but I think as the pace picks up when we go south, I think Hillary Clinton has got this thing in the bag. I think what you're looking at here is a send them a message kind of vote, kind of a George Wallace kind of thing. Send the ultimate winner a message and say she had better start saying some of the things that he's saying.
Jeannie Ives is a Republican. Jeannie, how do you see it as you look across the aisle at the Democrats?
Well, I think John's onto something here. So it's kind of we're going to send a message here with the Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders vote in Iowa. And it's not so much we're for Bernie Sanders. We're not for Hillary Clinton at this point. We do want to send her a message. And that's how I see it. It's like the anti-Hillary vote. That's why Bernie's doing so well.
So those tens of thousands of people that are turning out for Bernie Sanders are turning out because they don't love Bernie? They don't like Hillary? I think I would disagree.
No, I think maybe some of them do. I'm not sure that the polls are reflective of his crowds, though.
Mike Miller.
I would still argue that unless she is indicted, Hillary Clinton will be the nominee. Mm-hmm. But I think the Democrats are in very big trouble because if Bernie wins, he's a socialist. I don't think a socialist can win even against Donald Trump. If she gets in, unless there's complete corruption in the Justice Department, she's violated the law over and over with regard to these emails. We just have brand new information. She probably committed a felony by telling a staff member to send a particular item by removing the information that it was secret and so forth. This is a felony. I just can't believe for a second
Do you see the recent thing, John, as a significant thing?
I read it briefly today. It sounded like the hush-hush top-secret thing that she wasn't supposed to send in the clear were some talking points for a speech she was about to give.
Irrelevant.
Well, that's not clear.
Yeah. Well, again, the reason that my ears perked up with, and again, this revelation didn't get a lot of coverage, but my ears perked up when on Fox News Sunday today, Bob Woodward was a guest, and Bob Woodward, obviously, the man that brought down Richard Nixon, as a reporter for the Washington Post, he thought there was some significance in some of these in the most recent revelation of Saturday. Michael Bauer.
Well, I think Hillary Clinton has a bigger issue though than the emails. And it's a political issue in her campaign. Fundamentally, she has to have a reason and a vision to communicate as to why she wants to be president.
She
and I don't think so far she has communicated that.
So which is, being a woman's not enough of a message?
Well, actually, I think that's exactly right.
That's all she's
being the first
on.
Woman president is not a sufficient message.
That's right.
Especially to younger women whose attitude is, we will see a woman president. Maybe this isn't the right woman for us, though.
That's right.
So she's not exciting, you know. She may be exciting older Democratic women, but outside of older Democratic women, she's not really exciting a large part of the base.
So in your view, could she survive a couple of hits in the first two if she makes it to South Carolina? It's hard to believe that South Carolina Democrats are going to save Hillary Clinton because everyone is assuming that there's no appeal to what Bernie Sanders has said heading south in the campaign Nevada or South Carolina.
I wouldn't say that. I think the reason Bernie's doing so well is he's saying the right things. Bernie's hitting the ultimate anxiety that's going on, bipartisan, left, right, and that is the decline of the middle class, or the middle class being stuck, you know, wages being the same as they were, median household income.
What about just the
since
tone?
The 70s?
I said last week on the program, I want to get your reaction. I said the nerve that is being hit by Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, they're talking about different issues. Right. Mm-hmm. But the common denominator is they're hitting a nerve. They are saying things that people relate
well,
to.
Sanders,
they're not wishy-washy.
Sanders
they say
is,
something and you understand what they're talking
Sanders
about.
Sanders is talking about real stuff, real economic stuff that can be verified with data about income and whatnot. You know, listen to Trump. He sounds like a used car salesman. I mean, he just repeats himself for effect. I mean, he's very effective. He's very good at
obviously
what he's
done. Effective. But, he's winning in the Republican
before I give it up here, Hillary, I think that Michael is exactly right. She's all about identity politics. Mm-hmm. You know, us gals can do it. And if the Democratic Party has a big problem right now, it's that white guys are leaving the party in droves.
Well, I think that's a part of her problem. I mean, so Hillary Clinton thought that she could win as, you know, I'm the first going to be the first woman president. She was going to play all the gender identity politics that she could. But she didn't realize such a backlash would come from the political correctness that's, you know, gone around the United States. And this, you know, everything plays into this from the ISIS attacks to everything else. People are tired of being politically correct. They're not going to just vote for somebody based on their gender, and she missed the mark on that one.
1-800-723-8029 is the phone number, 1-800-723-8029. From coast to coast and border to border and around the world, I'm Bruce Dumont. This is Beyond the Beltway, live from Chicago.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Now we're going to share with you the Republican polls as of moment. And this is in Iowa. The Iowa caucus coming up shortly, less than a month away. Ted Cruz in first place at 28%. Donald Trump on his heels, 24%. Rubio jumping up to third place at 13%. Ben Carson fading, but still in there at double digits at 11%. You head to the Granite State in New Hampshire with their first-in-the-nation primary. Donald Trump with a big lead, 30% there. Rubio slipping into second place with 14%. Chris Christie campaigning hard there, now in double digits at 12%. And Ted Cruz rounding out the top four with 10%. And we'll talk more about the Republican field in just a moment, but I do want to stick with the Democrats for a while. And that is the issue of Bill Clinton. Is Bill Clinton a bona fide issue? Donald Trump has said that it was only in response to Hillary's comments about him that he was a sexist that prompted him to bring up the issue of Bill Clinton, and that has dominated a lot of the political landscape. Is Bill Clinton a legitimate issue, Michael Bauer?
Maureen Dowd in today's New York Times has a terrific column. Maureen Dowd, the liberal columnist, and she writes that it wasn't that Bill Clinton had affairs. It's that he had affairs as governor of Arkansas and as president of the United States, using his power position to take advantage of women and that's on Bill Clinton. And Maureen Dowd went on and said, the issue on Hillary Clinton is that she was an enabler.
Yes, she was.
And especially in this environment of, and Maureen Dowd mentions this, the Cosbys, where you look at Bill Cosby, and the issue that everyone's talking about now is the issue of his wife, Camille Cosby. What did she know and when? And if she knew about what was going on, should she not have spoken up? And I think that goes to Hillary Clinton now.
I agree. And I'm convinced that Bill is fair game. But what is more disturbing is the Hillary aspect of it. When you look back, there were a couple came out of Megan McArdle or whatever in Bloomberg and so forth, had quotes of Hillary about the women who were accusing Bill of what he did, including rape. It wasn't just an affair.
Right.
We're talking about a sexual assault. And she talked about Looney Tunes and these women have to be they have to be destroyed, and you drag a Carville goes out there and you drag a $100 bill through a trailer park and you never know what you're going to get. She stood by and let all of that happen. That is horrible judgment. And that she has the nerve then to say that she is against the Republicans in her war on women when she behaved this way for so long.
John, you cover this as a journalist with the impeachment. Your reaction to some of the things that have been said thus far is Bill's record and Hillary's complicity in at least helping trash some of the women that came forward against Bill Clinton. Is that an important issue on the character of Hillary Clinton?
I think I speak for a lot of Americans as saying I really don't care. I care about the bread and butter kind of issues, the paycheck kind of
what
issues.
What is it that you don't care about?
Pardon me?
What is it that you don't care about?
I don't think that that's something that is going to make up my mind when I go to vote for who's going to be president. Is what their sexual proclivities and habits are.
We're not talking proclivities.
Professor Miller, if you've got evidence of assault, you better go see the state's attorney.
You've been spouting off all this stuff.
I mean, you're just making it up, Mike.
I'm not making anything up. Juanita Broderick was interviewed. She told three people right after the assault what happened. One person within hours of when it happened.
Why isn't he in jail, Mike?
Because
you're making it up.
I'm not making anything up. You're arguing that Juanita Broderick is making up. And what did Hillary Clinton say about a woman who has been assaulted? She deserves to be believed from the start.
I think the issue here.
How can you? I don't believe you're saying this.
This is where I'm.
It goes to character.
This is where I'm getting to it. It is. What Bill Clinton did in the White House, in the governor's mansion, whether there were charges made or not, to me, I take that off the table. This is about what Hillary Clinton did.
Yes.
Hillary Clinton was part of an organized campaign run by the Clinton campaign, part of the Bimbo Eruption Squad, to destroy every woman that's come forward.
That's what they call
Kathleen,
her.
Willie,
I don't care what the
Paula
charge
Jones.
Was.
She right.
was responsible. That's on. That's on. That's on her back.
She's.
She
yep.
did that.
Right.
And I think this. I think this may speak to the issue that you said just a few moments ago. That older Democratic women, they love the Clintons. But if she's having a problem with younger Democratic women, the other big thing is there's a big difference. This world has changed significantly mm-hmm. since charges were made That's against right. Bill Clinton and charges were made against Bill Cosby. And the juxtaposition of the Cosby-Clinton yeah. issue unfolding during a presidential campaign, because Bill Cosby, he's going to be on trial for this entire campaign.
Does everybody remember what the NFL just went through last year? With domestic abuse and sexual assault and everything else and bringing
changed.
People in, there's an entirely different tone about this subject, and women need to stand up for women. And Hillary failed to do that. This goes straight to her character, in my opinion, and that's why she's struggling here. Does yeah. anybody remember, wasn't she ahead in the polls prior to Bill Clinton coming out so strongly in her campaign, and now she's behind Bernie Sanders in Iowa?
Could be just correlation, but you're right.
But I was just going to say, here we are on right-wing talk radio. The echo, you know,
yes,
the moderator.
Yes, I'm part of that vast right-wing conspiracy.
Wait a minute.
I'm floored.
I take exception to that description of this program.
Bruce, you're a Goldwater Republican. You're acting as moderator.
So were you.
I'm a Goldwater Republican.
So were I. Okay. But I want to ask. I want to speak to the issue, okay? Because you've now just somewhat challenged me. Do you not? You're a journalist. I really like you. I've known you for 30 years. Do you not see the difference that I just made about what Bill Clinton did and whether or not he had an accomplice in trying to destroy allegations made against her husband, and she was part of that? Do you deny that as a journalist?
I think that was all litigated. It was. I mean,
what
there
was litigated?
There was an impeachment
she was never,
effort.
She was never litigated.
Litigated in the sense that someone decided not to seek a true bill. There were no indictments.
Well, there has been some litigation. I mean, what let me ask you
when
this.
When do we get to Benghazi, Bruce?
Well, the movie's coming out
That's
in a couple of weeks.
Idea.
We'll do.
Yeah.
I want to get back to disagreements between what we have is. As a journalist, do you not see the difference between the delineation that I'm attempting to make? What Bill I'm saying, you know what? Forget what Bill Clinton did. Hillary Clinton was part of a campaign to destroy women who were stepping forward saying things about her husband, including rape. Not just a blowjob in the White House. Rape.
Yes.
All right. He was. What is the worst thing, John, that can happen to a lawyer? The worst thing.
He was impeached over this.
Wait a minute. What's the worst thing that can happen to a lawyer?
Disbarment?
Right. And was he disbarred in the state where he was once governor?
Yes.
Yes. Now, that is against Bill Clinton. But let's not try to conflate the issue that when we're talking about Hillary Clinton and this issue, that we're talking about sexual indiscretions in the White House or rape. We're really not. We're talking about what she did.
Bruce.
What she did. Michael.
Bruce, here's the fundamental problem that I see. We're not talking about what Bill Clinton actually did. Or the status of their marriage. That's their business.
That's
it's not
right.
my business.
That's
it's
right.
no
That's
one
right.
else's business.
I agree. Right.
The fact is, after the allegations became public, particularly related to Monica Lewinsky, and Hillary Clinton led these vicious attacks against this young intern in the White House, and they were ugly attacks. And she led the attacks because she was believing her husband was telling her the truth. And once her husband confessed that he had been lying about this, what was incumbent upon Hillary Clinton at the time was to say publicly, I apologize for what I said. I was misled by my husband, and I'm so sorry for the things I said about Monica Lewinsky. And in the almost 20 years since then, she's never once said that.
No.
She screwed up. And she attacked this young woman's character, and that's troublesome.
But let me ask you, Michael. Within your sphere of friends, we also hear that Bill Clinton is one of the most admired politicians in America.
Yes.
Okay. What does that say about people who admire Bill Clinton? What does it say about him? What does it say about our society that has him as one of the most admired men in the United States? What does it say about us collectively as a country?
Well, first of all, it says that in America, everyone loves someone who has a second chance. And everyone loves survivors, you know,
okay.
and Bill Clinton is the ultimate survivor, going through an impeachment trial and coming out ahead.
But isn't Hillary Clinton, wouldn't you say the same thing about her? She's the most admired woman in America.
She's the most important woman. Yeah.
Because she survived all this.
Well,
she survived all this, although the hardball questions were not asked by the news media on the Hillary Clinton issue.
Right. And they're being asked
And they're being asked yeah. at virtually every stop that Bill Clinton is on, and he's deflecting them.
Yep.
Should he answer those questions, John? Or is it none of anybody's business at this moment?
It was 10 years ago, Bruce. There are other things. There's the Middle East is in turmoil. That we've got a huge problem with the declining income of a middle class that seems to be disappearing. And you want to talk about Monica Lewinsky?
I do.
Because no, I think it goes to character. Again, you're hiring somebody. Is Hillary Clinton going to be honest as a commander in chief? Is she going to take responsibility? Does she have the character to lead?
No.
I mean, everything that she has shown in her life so far, including the Benghazi debacle, indicates that she doesn't have that type of character. She's not willing to actually go out there and stand up and do the right thing. And I think she's got a Bill Clinton problem. It's her problem.
And one thing that's consistent, and let's forget anything about Benghazi with one exception, and that's when the four bodies were flown home.
They
arrive on the tarmac, and she walks up to the families of these four people and tells them that she will do everything in her power, which she has no power as Secretary of State, to make sure that the man who made this video, which caused their death, goes to jail. They all said that's what she said. She denies it. She says they were liars. She calls these people liars. She knew when she told these people this that those people were killed because of an organized attack, a terrorist attack against the Benghazi location.
We got a break. Back shortly from Chicago.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair, see Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to Sam listening to us on KLBJ in Austin, Texas. Go ahead, Sam. Nice to hear from Texas tonight.
Hi. Yeah, I wanted to comment on Hillary Clinton. I think she's a kind of a poor character. I think the best thing she has going for her is the Clinton name, but at the same time, I think that that's a little bit of a curse for her. And I think if you guys are talking about, you know, what Clinton went through, you know, at the end of his presidency, I think he really brought the Democratic Party down. And when the Democrat Party had to sort of stoop so low as to come to his defense and hang in there with him. And as you recall, he didn't campaign at all for Al Gore after his presidency ended.
Al Gore did not want him to campaign for him.
No, because Clinton had just gone through, you know, the most shameful experience.
Right, that's true.
She was part of that shameful experience, and she participated in it. And I honestly like the Clintons, but I was kind of disgusted by that behavior. And then I didn't know much about, you know, what had gone on with some of the other discrepancies with things they've been involved with. But they do seem like the classic sort of shady political couple. And I think the fact that she's the only one the Democrats have and she's the main one that they have, it falls to the realization that he was the last one that they really had. Who's the next great Democrat?
Yeah, good point. Mm-hmm. Sam, before you go, I want to ask you another question because you're calling from Texas. Tell us your opinion of Ted Cruz, your senator.
I like Ted Cruz for many reasons. I tend to like politicians that say things that are unpopular. that people don't want to hear. I'm what you would call a liberal conservative person. I'm very liberal in my daily life and how I regard other people's and let them live their lives, but I'm also conservative in respects to family and finance and whatnot. So I like a lot of the logical things you say. I don't understand why people think that people with views like Ted Cruz or what you might call old-fashioned views are completely in line with racism nowadays. It's unfortunate that those
when that primary comes up in Texas, are you going to vote for him, Donald Trump, or somebody else?
I know a lot of my people in Austin. Well, it's a Sunday. There's not that many people listening, but I wouldn't want to say who I was going to vote for, but I probably would vote for Donald Trump over Ted Cruz mm-hmm. because of his stature nationally. I mean, he's a big celebrity. You know, we have a celebrity running for president, so it's kind of weird. Oh,
okay, all right. Thanks very much. Mike?
Yeah, that's interesting. I watched the Talking Head shows today, and I saw that's the first time I've actually sat down and watched an entire interview with Trump where he's not giving mm-hmm. a presentation,
yep.
which is different than interview. He came up, in my estimation, as how bright he is. But he also made it perfectly clear that I don't agree with so many of his things. His thing on China,
yes.
his economic views on China are preposterous.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking, I think, as an economist. Yeah. I think his ideas are preposterous. And his ideas of putting on a 40% tariff on – and that somehow the Chinese are manipulating the currency and this is leading to all this trouble. Nonsense. Absolute nonsense. So he believes some really strange things.
Now, Jeannie, during the break you said – you told us you're for Ted Cruz.
You're a latecomer
to the Cruz?
I am a latecomer.
All mm-hmm. right. Does the issue of where he was born concern you?
No.
Is that a done deal as far as you're concerned?
No, as far as I'm concerned, his mother was a U.S. citizen, and just because he wasn't born on U.S. soil doesn't mean that he's not a natural-born citizen.
Donald Trump says that one of the concerns he has is that if Cruz is the Republican nominee, the Democrats at some point, if he gets anywhere near the White House, and if he's the Republican nominee, he could get near the White House, they will file a suit to test this because this has never been tested before the United States Supreme Court. Do you doubt the Democrats would have the you-know-what to do that?
Oh, no. I think the Democrats think everything's fair game, and it's the Republicans, actually, that are a little more conservative and won't challenge things like that and let it pass on. So,
and that is a bona fide threat by Trump. You think that's real?
I do. I think the Democrats would challenge.
Michael Bauer?
I don't. I find it hard to believe that. First of all, you have to figure out when is this going to be challenged in court. It would probably be challenged in court only after a situation where Senator Cruz wins the election, and someone sues to question his. Whether his legitimacy in being president. I don't even know who is standing to sue.
It would be escalated. What do you think about this?
Well, I hate to sound like a broken record, but I don't really care. I mean, other than the fact, I think it says a lot about Donald Trump that he's willing to pick up any rock, throw any stone.
But Ted Cruz was very much a part of the birther movement along with Donald Trump. He was questioning where Barack Obama was born and whether Barack Obama was a real American. So this is the chickens coming home to roost for Ted Cruz.
Yeah, well, hypocrisy has never been one of their Republican virtues, I guess you'd say. I just says more about Trump than it does about Cruz. My understanding of the law, and I certainly don't know the immigration law, is that a child of a U.S. citizen is a U.S. citizen no matter where they're born. Maybe I just want to say,
I think John is absolutely right, though. Mm-hmm. We have very, very serious issues in this country, mm-hmm. both domestic and overseas.
Right.
And a lot of these issues are taking up time, and they're really unimportant issues. And we should be talking about these serious issues affecting us both within the United States and around the globe.
What is the most serious issue that Ted Cruz speaks eloquently on that turns you on, Jeannie Ives? What is the issue that you are most impressed with him on?
It's not even one issue, okay, with him. You know that he's the smartest guy in the room, that he has thought through everything – in terms of a policy, and that he's willing to articulate it, and that he knows who he is. He is a very authentic candidate. He knows who he is. You know where he stands by. You can be assured that he's going to make reasoned judgments. And, you know, obviously for me, security is a huge issue. I have two kids in the military. I mean, I am concerned about having the right strategy to defeat ISIS and actually protect the homeland. And I think when I look at Ted Cruz, I look at him as a serious candidate with really an extensive background on law and everything else.
Do you believe that his thoughts and past comments about Edward Snowden and about the recent changes in the Patriot Act, where he and Rand Paul, you know, were on one side, most everybody else in the Senate was against it, do you think that he hurt the ability of the United States intelligence to protect the American people with his vote in support of that change?
No, I don't think so. But I also think that that's a very technical area that most people don't understand.
Many things are very technical, right?
And it doesn't sound like to me, because I have actually read and heard him explain his vote about that policy. And it doesn't sound like they have any problem still watching communications from around the world. It's how long that data is collected for, and if you want to go further into it, whether or not you have to have permission to do so. So I'm comfortable with his position on that policy.
As a legislator in the Illinois General Assembly, mm-hmm. you know the importance of getting along with other members of your caucus and your colleagues and putting votes on a bill.
Sure.
Does it concern you that his track record in the United States Senate, and most everyone would agree he is the most hated man in the United States Senate, if he was president of the United States, what would he be able to get done when the majority leader of the Illinois, of the U.S. Senate is someone that he has publicly called a liar?
Well, I think if he's president of the United States, I think that he's going to put forth common sense legislation that you almost can't deny. So he would almost dare them to vote against common sense legislation. That's what you do when maybe you're a very articulate person. Maybe you stand on principle a lot. I mean, look, I sit in the ILGA, and I tell you what, there's times where I bet there's caucus members who don't like the way that I position myself on a lot of issues. I understand being kind of a little bit of a minority yep. spokesperson among a super minority. I get that. But you know what? If you're smart and you're articulate and you know your policy and where it needs to go, they listen eventually. And you can actually build coalitions on policy across party lines.
Mike Miller, does Ted Cruz's MO of being an obstructionist or being a fly in the ointment mm-hmm. of the status quo, does that hurt him as the president of the United States if he was elected?
I think so, unless he could somehow get them to rally behind him. Because a lot of times you will have these hard feelings, and then you simply
is
forget them once you're in power.
Just one, is that the big thing? If you get elected suddenly, you've got the big stick in
hand. I think you do have the big stick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John McGarren, what do you think of that idea?
The guy scares the heck out of me.
More than Donald Trump?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think Trump is real serious about a lot of things. He says he's a masterful showman. He'd be a lot of fun. Cruz, on the other hand, I think he's dead serious. And when he says he's going to carpet bomb ISIL and he's going to make the sand glow, you know, and if I had kids in the military especially, I would be very hesitant before I would
Michael Bauer.
Support Mr.
I
Cruz.
Tell you, I totally agree with John. Ted Cruz scares me greatly. I think the issue that brought all this to the forefront for me was the issue of the refugees fleeing the Middle East, particularly Syria and Iraq, mm-hmm. and fleeing not only to Europe, but some trying to come to the United States. And the reaction of most of the Republican candidates about wanting to put a ban on any Muslim immigrants coming to the United States. As if, first of all, we're going to know which ones are Muslims and which ones
are
Christians.
Wait a minute. Okay, so it was Trump who said a ban on Muslims. It was Ted Cruz who said a ban on Syrians or other areas where ISIL has a distinct presence. So he made a very big distinction there.
We've got to pause back. 1-800-723.
And that's about vetting.
1-800-723-8029.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, John.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to Carlos, listening to us in Houston, Texas, listening to us on POTUS XM. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Thank you, Bruce. I wanted to point out something, that the first six or seven presidents were not born in the United States. And so this is sort of law. It doesn't bother me. I think the founding fathers had the intent of where your loyalties lie. And it's clear the loyalties of Ted Cruz is the United States, not Canada. So I would vote for him if it wasn't for Trump. You know, I love Trump, and I love Ted Cruz. I think Trump did Ted Cruz a great favor, bringing it out now, like just like the Democrats, they do that. Mm-hmm. Bring it out now early, get it out of the way, fight it out, hash it out. And if Ted Cruz gets the nomination or is picked as VP for Trump, this will not be an untold surprise, and I think that's why Trump did it.
All right, we've got you are our second caller back to back from Texas tonight, who has said you're going to vote for Donald Trump over Ted Cruz.
Yeah, if it comes down to the primary, I am going to do that. However, if Ted Cruz is still in it, and for some unknown reason Trump is out of it, then absolutely, I'm going to vote for Ted Cruz over the other ones. Here's another thing. I don't think Trump is going to serve a full 4 years. I think he'll do it for two, maybe three.
Carlos, that's exactly what I said during the break.
Yeah, because he's a billionaire. He doesn't want to be a president. He's going to go in there. He's going to be used as a battering ram, and then he's going to hand it to Cruz and say, "President, you're articulate. Get it done."
So you want a Trump Cruz ticket.
Oh, that is the perfect ticket. I think
the Democrats may agree to that. Wouldn't you agree with that? That's the perfect ticket for you guys, John McCarron?
The Democrats are going to vote for Trump. I guarantee it.
No, go ahead.
I would be cynical to say that. You know, I'm not a cynic, Bruce. I'd much prefer someone like John Kasich.
John Kasich from
Ohio. But see, I'm the Democrat, so I'm sort of a moderate liberal kind of guy.
Carlos, thanks very much. Thanks very much for your call. Appreciate it. 1-800-723-8289. People that have listened to the show each and every week, they heard me say, you know, months ago on this program, that Kasich would have been, I think would have been a great candidate. He would have been a perfect candidate.
This was
before the phenomenon of Donald Trump. And then there were the opportunities for John Kasich in a debate to do well. He did okay. But John Kasich never broke through by the rhetoric he used, by the words he used. I mean, he had his chance, and he wasn't able to lead himself out of the pack.
P.T. Barnum said that.
You know, I have to say one thing about Donald Trump. You know, I know the conventional wisdom is that Democrats are salivating at the prospect of Donald Trump getting the Republican nomination and how easy it's going to be to beat him and how destructive he's going to be to the party in November, et cetera, et cetera. But the conventional wisdom, entire year of 2015 about Donald Trump, has been wrong, wrong, wrong.
Yes.
Everyone predicted he was going to fade quickly. Mm-hmm. Everyone thought his numbers were going to go down. He has said one thing after another, and in fact what he's done is dominate the political debate, and the issues he's raised are the ones that people are talking about. So I got to tell you, I will admit I don't get the guy. Mm-hmm. I understand the anger he taps into, but I would just caution everyone not to assume the conventional wisdom will hold.
The only, by the way, the only, to me, the only group aligned with the Democratic Party that he has not insulted are gays and lesbians.
That's correct. Fascinating.
What are you waiting for? What is he waiting for?
Isn't that interesting? Well, I assume Donald Trump, in the environment in which he has grown up, in the environment in which he's done business, has done business and grown up with a lot of people he knows who are gay or lesbian.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's a non-issue to him.
Jeannie.
Well, I think it's interesting because, to some degree, it's our perspective sitting here in Chicago. And and we live in a different world here.
My
mother in South Dakota, she's all in for Trump.
We
just heard two people from Texas where you also had, and I wish we had asked them, what did they think of Rick Perry and how as a governor? Because I kind of liked Rick Perry. He has a whole record of growth behind him for 12 years.
But we
sit here isolated, and I think the rest of the world is looking at Trump. When Trump can draw 10,000 people in Springfield, Illinois for a rally, that's phenomenal.
By the way, we should mention that we do this program one block from Trump Tower, Chicago, which if Trump got elected would be the Midwest White House, okay? Amelia, listening in Chicago on XM, go ahead, you're on the air. You could stop over every Sunday night.
You.
Go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling about the comments you guys were making about Secretary Clinton.
Yeah.
I don't think she needs to apologize at all. Monica Lewinsky was a grown woman, and she knew what she was doing was wrong because she was messing around with a married man.
Yes.
And Secretary Clinton should never apologize. Monica owes her an apology.
No, that's not the law. There's a huge power differential. There's a huge power differential between the President of the United States and a 22-year-old intern. This is considered to be sexual harassment. And one thing about sexual harassment in this kind of a situation, it is done because the person in power can do it.
That's right.
In Bill Clinton's own book, in his own words, he said, the reason I did it is because I could. I could get away with it. This was a prime.
Okay.
It was sexual harassment. This was not a consensual
Go ahead, Amelia.
Relationship.
Your response. Go ahead.
No, it was a consensual relationship because Monica made it clear, too, that she would be walking down the hall, pulling up her skirt, showing her thong underwear.
But Amelia, you're missing.
He shouldn't have messed around with her, but the nerves of you all to sit and say Secretary Clinton should apologize to her because she was upset.
But there's Kathleen Willey who he groped in the White House.
Jeannie, I've said that. Go ahead.
This is an improper relationship in the military. It'd be an improper senior subordinate relationship, and they would both be in trouble.
Yes.
But you all do not like her, and that just doesn't make sense to say that she should apologize for what took place. That's ridiculous.
She should be.
Okay. Anyway. Thank you for your call. We appreciate it. This is an issue that is not going to go away. And I'm sure Donald Trump will be very happy that it will not go away. And it's not going to go away. It's going to have to be addressed. And again, Maureen Dowd in her column today in the New York Times, again, one of the bastions of liberal punditry in America, comes down very hard on one side of this case. Back shortly.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sit cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. 1-800-723-8289. Last week, the President of the United States went and spoke in a very dramatic, emotional way about guns, something that is very, very important to him. And I'm wondering if around this table, since we have two liberals and two conservatives, whether or not there can be any agreement on anything that the President had to say last week that made sense to you, if not all of it. I know all of it didn't make sense to you, Mike Miller, but did a piece of what he said last week make sense?
I too agree that there can be some control on who gets their hands on guns, speaking as a gun owner. But the focus that he has, of course, is that he doesn't have the power to do many of these things. Congress should be doing them, not the president. And the second thing is he directed it at activities which have nothing to do with the people who were killed in the incidents which he he mentions. And so that seems like a strange behavior to me. I, too, weep for the people who die at the hands of these monsters. But the people who get the guns that are doing the killing are either mentally unstable or they are criminals. And they're, no matter what we do, they're going to get their hands on the guns.
John McCarron.
Well, I certainly believe in background checks and that everyone ought to be required. If you're selling guns, you ought to have the ability and the necessity of running background checks on who you're selling it to. And then if you're on... if you're on, for instance, the no-fly list, you can't board an airplane, then it would make sense to me that you couldn't buy a
but
gun.
I'm pretty sure. When I bought my gun, I went through a background check.
Yeah.
Well, I think what, 98% of all people who buy guns go through background checks because they buy it through places, through dealers who have to do that by law.
And
so why not 100%?
Well, we're nearly there in the United States anyway with, 100%
people. Do it legally.
But in Illinois, when we put in concealed carry, we have the most restrictive terms in terms of concealed carry, and that includes essentially a 24/7 background check. You're constantly checked against the crime database and even mental health if you're admitted for that in the state of Illinois. So he wants to expand this to all states. I think the states are managing it well. And the truth is that the gang violence that you find, the workplace violence that we've seen, what happened out in San Bernardino, you know what? There's not a whole lot that couldn't have been done to prevent that. Those are criminals. They had a criminal intent, and there's not you're just going to have to get better about vetting the people who are coming into the system, and also about the gang criminals. You're just going to have to clean up that activity.
Michael.
But much of the gun violence in this country isn't in these well-publicized cases of San Bernardino.
Oh, no.
Or Aurora, or even Sandy Hook, as tragic as those situations are. Mm-hmm. You know, much of the gun violence is happening, frankly, in the inner city.
Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And even the president, I think in his remarks, commented on, someone loading up, a carload of illegal weapons and crossing the state border and, and selling them. I don't understand why we're not doing more to prosecute cases involved in illegal gun trafficking. And
well,
I'm not talking about...
It's already illegal.
It is illegal.
You're not allowed to do this.
I know it's illegal. Yeah. I don't understand why we're not doing more... putting more enforcement efforts into that. And I'm not talking about trafficking of one illegal gun. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about people who are literally filling up their cars and dealing in dozens and dozens of illegal guns at a time.
Sure.
You know, we should be locking up these folks, prosecuting them, locking them up, and throwing away the key.
None of us disagree on that. But we're not doing it.
It's not a priority, it seems, on a local level.
Well, it's certainly not been a priority to clean up gang violence with Rahm Emanuel, as we've seen. I mean, it's gotten worse under his administration. Let's
focus on the bigger, broader issue here. Because when we're talking about these incidents, we're talking about the incidents that have occurred would not have been affected by the legislation that was proposed by the president. However, there are these cases where mostly large urban areas, of which we are living in one where we do this program from, there are gun issues. There's a high murder rate in the city of Chicago. Most of it is crime, is gang-related. How do we go after gangs, John McCarron? What unique enforcement do we need against gangs? And put that in context with an issue that exists in a large part of the African-American community in urban areas, that they feel that the police are maybe spending too much time in their neighborhoods and roughing people up.
Yeah, well, I think you need at least a two-pronged strategy. One is if there's guns involved, that you basically throw the book at folks, which we haven't been doing in Chicago or most other places.
So on one hand, we in the criminal justice system, we have criticism of the criminal justice system that we're over-incarcerating people.
Yes, well, we're over-incarcerating.
We're letting people out.
We're over-incarcerating people on drugs, on the wrong charges.
The wrong people are being incarcerated.
Yeah.
If you're convicted of a nonviolent crime, particularly usage or even trafficking in drugs, depending on the amount, what you should be doing is going to narcotics courses and not going to jail.
Well, I agree with you fully, but I understand that's 7 to 10% of the total people in jail.
On top of it, typically what you've done is you've taken who you presume to be a dealer and you have bargained down to, well, we're just going to give you a fine for being a user or having a personal use on it. So a lot of those crimes are bargained down to a lesser offense.
We're going to go to Ray in Gary, Indiana, listening to us on XM Radio tonight. Go ahead, Ray. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I listened to your discussion, ladies and gentlemen, and I would think that the biggest problem that you have is that the gun violence is not really tied to gangs in Chicago. I live in Gary. Gun violence is not tied to gangs in Gary. The problem is we should be asking the question, why do kids get into gangs? Mm-hmm. Our families are in disarray. There's no federal legislation that can help somebody raise their kids. There's no federal legislation that could make a family stay together. There's economic circumstances the federal government can affect, of course, but these are other issues that the government has no power to really affect. And we're not asking the right question. We should be asking why these children end up in gangs and get their hands on these illegal guns.
And why they disrespect life. Yeah. They disrespect life.
Yes, I can tell you why. I'm a pastor of a church. I'm a pastor of a church in Gary, Indiana. I can tell you why. The family in the inner city has undergone so much issues and problems and stresses. The 72% single parenting rate in the black community, I'm a black pastor, so I can say this, has decimated our community. The problems that Republicans have is that they don't see that. They don't come in to ask the right questions. And Democrats have taken black people for granted for the last 40 years, especially in Northwest Indiana and Chicago. So we're not asking the right questions, and government really doesn't have the tools to deal with this. This is an issue of one's personal morality, spirituality, and the breakdown of the family.
Yeah, I like to try. See, I agree with you, Pastor, but I'll tell you, try saying what you just said as a white person, say, within a university. You will be branded a racist instantly.
I can't say that on the House floor.
Yeah, invite me to your class. I'll say it.
Ray, Reverend, do me a favor. Would you stay on the line? I want to continue this conversation. We have to go to a break. I want to continue this conversation, broaden a little bit, but I appreciate your call. Stay right on the line. We'll be back to you and hear more of your comments when we roll on from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8289. Back shortly from Chicago.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE. I'm back in Chicago, and Reverend Ray from Gary, Indiana, who's listening to us on XM Satellite Radio tonight, joins us. Ray, are you still there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
I want to follow up a point you made, and that is the black church is at least perceived by the white community as very important and very influential in the black community. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it is. I think it's a very fair assessment. Now, my particular church is a multi-ethnic church in a predominantly black community like Gary. But I'll tell you, the church has a great deal of influence, but some of that influence is waning, and I'll tell you why. We are probably on our second generation of what I would call never churched kids. These kids have never been a part of church, never grown up in Sunday school and things like that. And consequently, they know very little about faith, religion, and the subsequent lessons of morality that come from those types of upbringing. That's a rarity. My parents, grandparents were all reared in a church context. Now, that's not true about the family in the inner city anymore.
And I was wondering, Pastor, I see even at universities that relatively speaking, black women are flourishing and black men are languishing. And is it true that there's much more activity in the churches by the black women as opposed by the black men?
That's kind of a misnomer, because a lot of the leadership that happens in black community and black churches are black men. But part of the problem, again, as it relates to activity, many men who are still part of their family dynamic are working jobs where they have to be at work on a Sunday morning and they can't be in church with their families. Mm-hmm. But those who can are there. The outreach of the black church towards the black male has to change. We have to get the black male off the table of forensic study and begin to actually be involved in people development. And it starts with that life-changing message, in my opinion, the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Okay. Master, what I want to do is I want to put you on hold right now. Hopefully our producer, Dan Dorfman, will be able to get your number, because I would like to continue this conversation, perhaps bring you in here on a Sunday night to talk around the table with our guests in a face-to-face confrontation, okay? Or not confrontation, not so much
Thank
a confrontation,
you.
But a discussion.
No, I understand.
Hey, it might
Thank
turn
you.
Into a confrontation, but that we will invite you because it'll be a conversation.
Good. Thank you.
All right, thanks very much. We've got to put you on hold right now. Hopefully you'll get it.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Speaker of the House Paul Ryan had his little symposium today or this Saturday in South Carolina, where they're trying to rethink how we attack poverty, because we've actually spent trillions of dollars for the last 50 years on trying to solve the poverty problem, and we've barely moved the needle. And I guess if you really look at earning power, it's actually gotten worse. So rethinking how we handle poverty would be an important discussion to actually bring in black pastors like Ray and get a broader sense of what you can do to lift people up out of that.
Good. Let's go to Doug in Knoxville, Tennessee, listening to us on WOKI. Go ahead, Doug. Are you there? Doug, Are you there? Going once, going twice. Let's go to line three. Josh, also calling from Knoxville, Tennessee, also on WOK. Are you there? Josh, are you there? I guess Tennessee is not hearing us tonight. How about Springfield, Illinois? Tom, WMAY, line four, are you there? Is anybody there? Can we punch any line and see how our phones are doing? And I guess our phone lines are not working, so we'll find out what happened. And please alert me, guys, in the control room when we get our phones back. But we've got a full board of lights up here, apparently, but they're not working. Let's talk a little bit about foreign policy. Within the last couple of weeks, is there reason to believe that we may be on to something and that there may be some positive things happening in the Middle East as it relates to the attack on ISIS? In your view, Jeannie?
No, I don't see a whole lot positive happening.
So some of the military actions in that part of the world, ISIS is not in a defensive role?
Well, I'm looking more broadly at what happened with Saudi Arabia versus Iran, and I think that muddies the water and that, we're going to have to handle that crisis before we can get back to restoring, going after ISIS. And even we're not the main attackers here. We need to be just the supporter. We are the supporting role. So I think that that's really muddied the waters, and I think you're going to see enhanced problems there and that is going to take the focus away from ISIS, and I don't think that that's a good thing.
Yeah, I was just in the Middle East. I was teaching in December in Bahrain. And one another thing that's going on in the Middle East, which could foment trouble, is that with the price of crude oil as low as it is, mm-hmm. these countries are getting themselves into very bad fiscal positions. They're borrowing huge quantities of money because they need $80 or $90 a barrel for their budgets to be balanced. And this can create all kinds of unrest as they begin to cut back on government expenditures, which could also, by the way, include maybe military expenditures if we want them to be part of the battle against ISIS. And then you have the split between Saudi and Iran. Of course, both of them were in favor of destroying ISIS. Even though one's a Sunni, one's a Shia, they don't want this particular group to be in charge. And now, of course, with this split between these two major countries, with the tensions, and then Bahrain has broken off its relationships with Iran, all this just makes everything worse. And I'm not sure the president, I'm not sure anybody else, but I know that the president doesn't have any clue what to do.
Michael Bauer, the Middle East is a special
I think spot Bruce, in what your you're heart. Referring to is the fact that the Iraqi army and the militias
have had some
were able to take over, take back Ramadi from ISIS.
That's good.
But if you look at what they took back in Ramadi, it's basically a war-torn, ripped apart, deserted, destroyed city. There's nothing there other than rubble. So it's a victory, I guess. But I think of greater concern to me, and I've said this all along, you look what's going on in Syria and this war criminal who heads the Syrian government, who is destroying and killing his people. And this has been going on now for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And we just sit back and let him commit war crimes and don't feel any need to do anything to intervene. And what has been horrific.
But is he the top priority at the moment?
Over the last week, the news media has been showing video of what's going on in some of the towns that are being caught in the middle between the Syrian government and the militias and ISIS. And you see these civilians there who look like Holocaust victims at the end of World War II. Mm-hmm. They're emaciated and they're dying. And you know what? Unless we deal with Assad, we will never solve the problem of ISIS. Assad has to be the number one priority because the Sunni Muslims have such major distrust for Assad, and rightly so, that they will always, always be of more support to ISIS unless Assad goes.
And remember how this happened. This happened under Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton's Secretary of State tenure. So she's got a problem as well trying to explain this away because the world is a mess. And as well, I forgot the word that the pundits were using to describe what's been going on in North Korea, the strategic patience or something like that, or having patience for them to build a H-bomb, if that's exactly what was built. Regardless, I mean, you've had a complete lack of responsibility and taking leadership around the world in a number of areas. And Hillary's going to have to explain this on the campaign trail during the general election. It's going to be difficult.
John, you were smirking.
Well, I was smirking at Jean because she's decided to politicize, you know, pin the tail on Hillary.
Wait a minute. You pinned the tail on Bush for 8 years, for heaven's sake.
Well, and I'm about to do it again if we've got time, Bruce. You know, Bush, number one, knew not to go up the road. I mean, after we liberated Kuwait, he knew not to go up the road because maybe he understood there was this Shia-Sunni tension in Iraq. Remember, Sunnis are in a minority in Iraq. But we go in under Bush, too, and it's neocons and with saying we're going to democratize Iraq.
Hillary agreed
one,
to that.
One man, one vote. And maybe she did. She did.
Not questioned.
One man, one vote. So in other words, we give the country, we help conduct an election, and obviously the Shia majority wins the election. And what were we expecting, that there would be some sort of bipartisan coalition would be formed?
But,
I don't think so.
But
I mean, that was
not a reasonable expectation. In judging the next president of the United States, it is not unwise, nor is it stupid, to look at the track record of the Secretary of State, who happens to be the Democratic nominee or likely Democratic nominee. That is her prime credential. Yeah. I mean, it's been 10 years since she's been a senator. She's been the Secretary of State in a part of the world where virtually, according to Jimmy Carter, you may not revere him, but some Democrats do. And he basically said there isn't a place in the world that's better off today than before Barack Obama took over. Every one of them is.
Bruce, what I was trying to say is this whole imbalance, this whole Sunni-Shia phase of the outburst occurred after we took Iraq and changed the majority in Iraq.
So then when Donald Trump says, along with Bernie Sanders, the one thing they agree on, they both opposed the war in Iraq. So Donald Trump gets some credit for that, right?
Well, I suppose. I think almost in a bipartisan way, the United States has been very naive in its approach to the Middle East.
I'm saying, going back to
taking the Versailles borders as being the divisions between nation states, I question that whole theory, and we've been totally ignorant of the sectarian situation.
We've had 15 years now, for 8 years under George W. Bush and 7 years under Barack Obama, of what is nothing other than a mediocre, failing foreign policy, particularly in the Middle East. And it is mind-boggling what George W. Bush did and Barack Obama got elected, and things have just gotten worse. They haven't gotten better.
Okay, we've got to pause. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion and also ask, is there an alternative still left, still viable, to stop either Donald Trump or Ted Cruz? Who might it be?
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight, we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
Let's zoom on back in Chicago, and a big question that a lot of Republicans have is that if Donald Trump and Ted Cruz appear to be running at least 1 and 2 in Iowa, and Ted Cruz is running 4th in New Hampshire at the moment, but is there someone that can come through on the establishment lane, as they're referring to, and become the viable challenge either to Ted Cruz or to Donald Trump? And my question to you is, Mike Miller, who is it? Is it Rubio? Is it Christie? Is it still Bush? Is it who might it be? Kasich?
Of course, I've been a Kasich man from the very beginning, and I wish that it would be somehow that the Republicans would come to their senses and vote for the man, in spite of his gruff and difficult personality sometimes. I don't know. There are so many talented people in the Republican side, but they seem to be self-destructing because they're attacking each other and so forth instead of attacking Hillary. And I'm not sure who can step up.
Jeannie, who do you – now, again, you're for Ted Cruz. I want to repeat that. But who do you think can emerge, by the way, because it will be important on the 15th of March. That's when Illinois and a lot of other big states will be voting. March 1st is the big state. Yeah. But March 15th is the state that a lot of moderate states, semi-moderate states, northern states, including Ohio. I mean, John Kasich could run as a favorite son and walk away with delegates from Ohio. But who else emerges that you think can be a competitor on March 15th? And how many will be by the wayside by then?
Well, the obvious choice is Marco Rubio. He's obviously got – he's running third in most of the contests right now. And at least the people that I hang out with, they like Marco Rubio. A lot of them are delegates in Illinois for Marco Rubio. And he's – now getting positioned as the establishment choice after really being a conservative choice and trying to move over into the lane. So he would be the compromise candidate, bringing both of them together. But I don't think that's where the sentiment of our party is. And I don't think that's where the sentiment of truly we got to get outside of our little Chicago area. And we're looking broad picture. People want a game changer. And I think it's Trump or Cruz. I think they are game changers.
But again,
they're
the game changers, let's
then
ask
it's Rubio.
Now. Michael, look at the Republican, at least at the moment, the also-rans. Who emerges as the viable challenger to the Trump-Cruz juggernaut?
Well, I think that's difficult right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of them really appear to really have a strong base of support.
Mm-hmm. If you finish third in both Iowa and New Hampshire, doesn't that give you at least the mantle for the moment to see if you can then defend it 10 days later in South Carolina?
Absolutely. If Michael Rubio ends up in third place.
Both times.
The fact is, after New Hampshire, mm-hmm. some of these candidates are going to be dropping out. It's going to weed out a number of these Republican candidates.
Sure.
So, and the question becomes, where does their support go?
Well, in South Carolina, he's got Trey Gowdy as a backup. That was a huge endorsement from Marco Rubio. So I think that you're right on there, Michael.
Has Nikki Haley supported anybody down there?
I'm not sure.
I'm never convinced that endorsements really count for all that much. Mm-hmm. Endorsements make candidates feel good, but I'm never convinced that their support
like
is transferable.
John, what about you as of the also ran candidates at the moment?
I don't split
also the, running candidates. They're not past tense yet.
I don't split the field that way. I mean, the more likely scenario is that the antipathy for Cruz across the party is so great that I think they would get behind Donald Trump.
Mm. Okay.
That he would be in the hopes that he's not the carnival barker
you can make a deal with him, right?
Well, you probably could.
So you think some of the establishment money may pull back or hedge their bets
and go to Trump?
In other words,
to stop
Cruz. In other words, for the establishment, stopping Cruz is more important than stopping Trump.
Absolutely, I believe that.
Does everybody agree with that? I do.
Yeah, I think
I agree.
Yeah.
I think that's very interesting.
Yeah,
and if the polls are
is it just because he is unliked, or is it because he's an ideologue and establishment Republicans who want to win may feel that Ted Cruz would have less of a crossover appeal than Donald Trump?
Well, there's no doubt Donald Trump has crossover appeal. I mean, there was a recent poll saying that 20% of Democrats are potentially going to vote for Donald Trump as well. So
is that the problem then for Ted Cruz, that he doesn't have that crossover appeal in a one-on-one with Hillary Clinton?
Well, I think it comes down to what a primary voter is voting on. So a lot of times people vote. Sometimes they'll say, well, I want the person who can beat Hillary Clinton. I'm going to go with who I think is that one. A lot of times, though, people say, look, I'm just going to go for the candidate I really, really like. So when they get in that voting booth, we're going to find out. And I don't think we know anything until the field actually becomes smaller and we get a better sense of where this is all going.
I also don't think you have that mindset in Iowa or New Hampshire, or maybe even South Carolina. Because I think at that point, even the Republican primary voters, they're watching what other states are doing.
Absolutely.
I don't think you get to the person and say, well, listen, my vote can really determine who gets this nomination. I don't think that comes until March 1st or March 15th.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
And the only person who is, if the polls are to be believed, the only person outside of Cruz and Trump is Rubio, who kind of appears every time within the top four or five.
Yeah. Christie has he's slightly behind in New Hampshire, but he's the only other one. But but Kasich is nowhere in the top four. Bush is
and I was
in single digits.
I was a big fan of Rand Paul because I have I'm a conservative with some libertarian leanings, but it's not going to happen.
However, when you look at what happens on March 15th, when you look at Ohio. I mean, John Kasich could still stay alive and do well in Ohio. And then we set up what we discussed last week on this program, and that is the possibility of a brokered convention.
Yes, I mean, that's very possible.
You know,
isn't really every convention brokered to some degree? I mean,
my point is that you are
winning those primary voters or you're not winning those primary voters. I mean, it's just before
I think we had a distinct difference.
By the time it came down to convention.
When you get to, again, that's
what a convention's for.
If there's a split decision in the first four, again, I think South Carolina has been more derivative of who wins the Republican nomination in the last four cycles than anyone else. So who wins in South Carolina is important, and then you've got Nevada basically around the same time, and then you get to the SEC primary.
Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely perfectly set for Ted Cruz. But it's Ted Cruz and it's almost Ted Cruz and Ted and Donald Trump alone competing on March 1st. Then you get to the 15th. That's when a Rubio or an establishment candidate can be the challenger to the winner of the Super Tuesday, the March 1st primary, which could be somebody could take all the marbles on that. I mean, somebody could come out real strong, although
as we just heard
from Texas today, because Texas is on March 1st.
Well, if that happens, you don't really have a brokered convention.
You get
somebody over 50%. You can't define that.
We talk about brokered conventions. Brokered conventions happened in the day and age where there were a lot of favorite son candidates who ran in their state's primaries, controlled all the delegates from their states.
Mm-hmm.
So no candidate was ever going to the convention with a majority of the delegates committed.
Right.
You know,
it's kind
of an anachronism.
We talk about a brokered convention.
What happens if a John Kasich is sitting there with 40 or 50 delegates?
By the way,
John Kasich could be a guy who makes a deal because someone's going to need his vote to get him over to 1,224 votes.
Well, if it's that close. I mean, brokered conventions were more in the day where there were four or five different favorite sons from very big states.
Right.
If John Kasich is the only favorite son controlling a state's delegation, I don't think that's enough for a brokered convention.
And if you are Jeb Bush or if you are Marco Rubio, do you want to run the risk? And this is more for Jeb Bush than for Marco Rubio. Do you want to run the risk that you will lose your home state to Donald Trump? And Trump is leading in Florida at the moment.
Right.
That would be embarrassing. And I would think that Trump, just in looking at the dynamics of that, Trump should win Florida if both Rubio and Bush are in the race.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'll split the Floridian vote, and Trump has got all these transplanted New Yorkers and people from around the world.
I think the older generation actually likes Trump, to be honest with you. Yeah.
But I also think that maybe it's just because I'm hoping that the Justice Department is going to be correct in their actions. I still think the James Comey primary. Yeah.
The head of the FBI, is he going to be the deciding factor?
I think the Democrats may be the topic of conversation relatively soon. And the question then becomes, if it is Bernie Sanders, who does he pick as his running mate? If he would pick an Elizabeth Warren, you have a socialist and a far leftist, a woman. I just think that could be as exciting or as damaging as Trump and somebody.
No, I think what happens at that point is if Hillary really stumbles, I think you're going to find the stop Bernie candidate, and that gets the phones ringing back to Joe Biden.
Right. Yeah. And if anybody in Washington I'd like to go down and have a Chicago-style pizza with and so forth, it would be Joe Biden. I just think the world of the man.
Yeah.
But, boy, he would scare me being commander-in-chief. I just I think that would be a real issue, a real
problem. Is there any other surprise that is likely on the horizon? Does anybody see – we've had a year of – last year was a year of surprise. It's hard to believe that Donald Trump has only been on the political scene
since June 16th. Well, I think we've got an economic surprise, possibly an economic surprise. You know, the markets did not do well this week.
Right.
Yeah. Illinois specifically has not done well. I don't know what the producer's index is in other states, but we're not doing well in this state in that realm. So I think that
manufacturing index is below 50, which is
yeah, that's right.
Bad.
Yeah. So I think that there's some economic uncertainty that we need to deal with. And I think that
terrorism
is going
could
to
still
be
terrorism could still be the big outside event. And it does not augur well.
The immigration debate is not going away.
No,
at all.
And that does not augur well for I think both parties have a challenge of dealing with that particular that particular issue.
And keep in mind, there's one other factor, which is the possibility of a third-party candidate. Reports this weekend indicate that Michael Bloomberg is still looking at running for president as a third-party candidate, and he would self-finance.
Our Democrats, Michael Bauer and the ever-popular John McCarron, thank you for being with us. And Mike Miller and also Jeannie Ives, Republicans, thank you for being with us tonight. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thank you for being with us tonight as well.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlink's now at 888-880-TREE.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's go to Knoxville, Tennessee. Hopefully Doug is there. Are you there, Doug?
Sam, good evening, Bruce.
Okay, good. We had a little problem getting you a little bit earlier, but go ahead.
Well, I appreciate your time. One of your panelists was advocating that citizens who are on the secret government no-fly list should be barred from owning weapons.
Yeah.
I would just like to say that some fundamental rights can't be taken away in America, or at least they used to not be taken away without due process law. And just because some faceless government bureaucrat citizen on a secret no-fly list, which, by the way, included Senator Ted Kennedy, it's hardly a liberal position, it seems to me, to take away a fundamental right based on a secret government bureaucrat list.
John?
Well, I obviously have a very different view of the Second Amendment. I don't agree with the recent Supreme Court decision, certainly about concealed carry. There's a reference in the Second Amendment to a well-regulated militia, and it seems to me that is being interpreted far too broadly. A well-regulated militia ought to be mean a well-regulated militia. Strict interpretation, should it not?
No, everybody was a member of the militia back then. And the Supreme Court has ruled. Lots of things I don't like the Supreme Court. The Kelo decision to me was an abomination in terms of the takings. But, John, this is the law of the land. How can you just give away your constitutional rights like that?
Well, go ahead.
Well, you know what? The no-fly list is supposed to be a list of people who are suspected of terrorist connections, so they should not be in an airplane. Now, this is another example of an idea that I think most people at least agree with. Mm-hmm. But the problem is how the policy is implemented.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You see six-year-old kids on the list. You see Senator Ted Kennedy on the list. And you see
why
this ridiculous.
He's dead.
But when he was alive, he was on the list. But yeah. But you see these ridiculous mistakes, and you wonder, can't the government implement this correctly?
No.
Well, but that. But nobody they can.
Nobody has confidence in the government to do anything right.
Well, that's where a lot of the sango comes from.
That's right.
Douglas, and thank you very much for your call. In the minutes left, we're going to talk, although we do this program from Chicago and we don't like to talk a lot about what's happening in Chicago, it's hard not to talk about what's happening in Chicago as it relates to our mayor, who is a national figure. He's a national figure because of all the chaos and the confusion and the distrust and angst and anger that exists in the city of Chicago over a recent police shooting or a series of police shooting or a systemic problem of police shootings in Chicago. And Michael Bauer, my question to you is, there's a lot of people who are saying Rahm Emanuel must go, and there's a move in the General Assembly to have a recall, which is something that you would support, right, Gene?
I was the first Republican to sign on to LaShawn Ford's bill to recall the mayor.
But would it deal with Rahm Emanuel or some future mayor?
That would have to be litigated. There's interpretations saying that it can only happen for future mayors, but that was definitely something that would be litigated over. The bill is pretty straightforward, saying it would take, it's effective immediately, but whether or not a city mayor could also be affected by that law.
And what would be the requirement for the people as far as petitions to get something like that on the ballot?
I'm trying to remember the details now, but I think it's it's a certain percentage of voters in each district in the city of Chicago.
Is there
have to do it?
Is there a climate, Michael Bauer, that could be created or evolves that would force Rahm Emanuel to step aside for the good of the National Democratic Party?
You know, knowing Rahm, and I've known Rahm for a number of years, I find it hard to believe that he would ever step down from office.
I agree with that.
I just find that inconceivable. But I also want to tell you, I think over the last couple months, there's a growing feeling in Chicago that the wheels are coming off the car. Mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, we had the Laquan McDonald video, and then it broadened into a number of police abuse and police brutality cases that it turns out the city has settled the last 10 years for an amount in excess of $250 million. And I think people are not looking at the money, but they're saying, God, if we've been spending so much money to settle these police abuse and brutality cases, how come no one stood up and said that there was a problem?
Yeah.
Didn't anyone realize there was a problem? And now all of a sudden, there's a problem with the law department. Mm-hmm. Now, the law department seems to be, the city of Chicago law department, mm-hmm. seems to be part of the code of silence and the conspiracy and covering up cases. Now there's an allegation from a number of black Chicago firemen that the fire department should also be investigated by the Civil Rights Division for discriminatory disciplinary hearings and discriminatory hiring and promotion practices. And there's this feeling about, is everything going wrong in Chicago?
Well, on top of it, he's going out for $3 billion more in additional borrowing. That's not even a school.
And our schools are falling apart.
Another $1 billion. Right. So,
John McCarron, how badly is Rahm Emanuel hurting the image of Chicago right now?
Well, I'd say very badly, but I think there's a lot of piling on going on, and I think we just heard some more. Okay. There's a lot of
what's viable and what's not. What's over the line based on what you just heard?
Over the line? Well, I don't know. $3 billion. Interest rates are low. It's a good time to be borrowing.
No,
for
it's
capital,
10 times greater than the.
Projects.
They're borrowing at 10 times the greater
again, that,
than
that,
the.
But
next
it's more like
I do agree.
Is more about
like I do agree with Michael though that this isn't the kind of guy who's going to step down, and I'm hoping. In fact, I just wrote a column for the Tribune. It was published last Friday in Tribune. Saying, it's time for Rahm to start getting even here. Now that our Republican governor has turned on him, it's time for him to get more involved with the legislature, call in some chits, put some pressure on the votes that he can put pressure on, and maybe start talking about a progressive income tax for the state of Illinois. How do you like that, Governor Rauner?
Yeah, but the reason that I asked the question about the National Democratic Party is, at what point does Rahm's association with Hillary Clinton conceivably hurt Hillary Clinton? In other words, could there be a significant drop-off in black support for Hillary Clinton because Rahm Emanuel is part of her perceived team? Well, is that a possibility?
You know what? I need a 10-second answer.
I think it's a possibility. We're going to see this March 15th in the state's attorney's race and how Anita Alvarez does. If she loses her reelection and if she loses badly, which I expect she will, it's a bad omen for Rahm Emanuel.
Okay, we have to say farewell to our guests and also our thanks to Colin Bobbitt and Dan Dorfman and Dylan Klauke for their assistance in the production of this program. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv. Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.